This is a replay of the Thursday night, January 18th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from One VoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's One VoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together. And as I say, if it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine. 888-876-5593. That would be 8888 Raleigh. And so yesterday was Kids Inventor Day, and I was going to tell you about this 17-year-old. Never got around to it, so I figured, well, let's get out of the way now. Because I do get email occasionally saying, you started to talk about it, and then I never heard the rest of the story yet. My friends blame me for that, too. In any event, here is the deal. It's a 17-year-old who last year made $410,000 on her side hustle. Not bad. But it started when she was about 12 and wanted to go in business. And so that little entrepreneurial spirit. And at that time, she decided she was going to make leggings. And she actually attempted this and even entered a contest. And the deal was BizWorld gave 16 to 22-year-olds a chance for prizes and furthering, but she failed to win even pitching her idea to get any of the prize money or that. And then she thought, you know, anybody can make leggings, but I've got a different idea. She decided she was going to make, I kid you not, luxury lofts for guinea pigs. And I should cut to the chase and say the only reason she probably was able to really pull this off and make the big bucks was her father, a computer programmer whose family had connections in China to factories who made stuff. So in terms of getting things made, she probably had an easier trek than most kids. But on the other hand, who the heck thinks, yes, luxury lofts for guinea pigs are going to bring me my fortune? And it all started when she was pretty much a preteen and saw that one of her guinea pigs was snatched by an eagle when she let it out to play in the parent's backyard, and she determined that there was going to be a way, something better than the traditional cage. And so she started going through a number of models on paper, and she invested $2,000 of her savings to launch Guinea Loft. And her dad, as I say, made some connections, and in 2022 alone, she sold just under 11,000 cages. And last year, she sold $410,000 worth of these cages, netting her about $34,000 a month. Not bad for a senior in high school, which she is. She says she might delay college a little bit because this is, you know, take advantage of this. It's going pretty well. And she said, well, I had that weird epiphany where I realized a lot of companies can make leggings, but this is innovation. Guinea Loft could fill a really big gap in the market. And I said, what market? Well, apparently the traditional guinea pig cages are made with bars and roofs and tarp or plastic. And not only are they difficult to clean, but they're not that great for the guinea pig, apparently, though I haven't seen any interviewed. But her design involved an open floor enclosure for more visibility and mobility, and a two-tiered bottom, a loft style. And the final design included replaceable bottoms from biodegradable wax-covered paper, similar to, as she put it, airplane barf bags. Well, okay, get down. The bottom line was that it was easy to throw out and, of course, easy to clean. And the easy-to-clean part has gotten a lot of parents who have bought their kids' guinea pigs some interest. So she tested the products, and like I say, her dad had the family connections to this factory, so there was a six-person team in China helping her manufacture, package, and photograph the products. And, you know, normally you'd say, well, come on, this is all about family connections, but the part that got me, guinea pig lofts? Who thinks of this? Well, apparently this kid, they produced 100 cages to begin with, and she was pretty elated because they sold 3 in the first hour they were on the market. And within 2 weeks, they sold them all. And at that point, she reapplied to BizWorld, the competition that threw her out with her leggings. And this time, she won $10,000 in investment funds from them. And the company has a 25% profit margin, and she's reinvesting that into marketing. I don't know how much marketing you want to do. I don't know how much guinea pig demand there is, but nonetheless, she says, witnessing the tangible effects of guinea loft cages through customer reviews is empowering. Yeah. Who would have thought of it? Well, this kid, obviously. And she said, this has boosted my confidence. I guess her bank account, too. So yesterday was Kids Inventor Day. And this kid, whose name, we should give your names, in case she does something really amazing, you can say, oh, I remember when she was doing the guinea pig cages. That's Bella Lynn, 17 years old, Southern California. All right, 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, Leah is in Marcus Hook. What's up tonight, Leah?
Hi, Raleigh. How you doing?
Well, not as good as Bella Lynn and her guinea pig cages, but can't complain.
You know, in some Latin countries, they eat guinea pigs.
Well, I don't know. Maybe she'll have placemats next.
I watch 90 Day Fiancé, and this is the stupid stuff I pick up, you know?
Oh, my God. Well, it must be an appetizer, because they're not very big.
Well, I don't know. They can get pretty fat. I don't know.
Oh, God.
They can pork up pretty much.
You know, I love these stories because it causes me to really decide I'm not eating ever again. That might be good for dietary habits.
I know. The reason I called is, well, twofold. First, I wanted to know what you thought of the Ticketmaster thing, if you know about it. There's a movement afoot to break up Ticketmaster. For Congress to go in and pick up Ticketmaster.
Yeah.
I want to know what you thought of that.
I hate to think the government has to undo it as far as that goes. And I know that the success of Taylor Swift kind of highlighted some ticket fiascos, to say the least. And so it's Live Nation and Ticketmaster. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I do think that from what I've heard, it's all anecdotal because I don't buy tickets to concerts and all that stuff. But you wind up with some prices that are over the top.
Outrageous.
Yeah, over the top, unrealistic. And I've never looked into it, but I assume what they are doing is almost like the airline model. They're trying to price it by whatever they think they can get at the moment, and it's probably mm-hmm. computer generated. So the question is the dominance, obviously, Live Nation, which dominates this, and of course they have a Ticketmaster, I assume. So.
They're saying that Ticketmaster has a monopoly.
Well, yeah, because Live Nation and Ticketmaster merged over a decade ago.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would really have to look into it, but my knee-jerk reaction is I hate for the government to come in and have to do anything.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But, you know, Bruce Springsteen for $5,000 a ticket, well, if he's selling it out, I guess more power to him, but I don't think so. Dynamic
it's
pricing.
It's just like regular people can't afford to go to concerts anymore. We used to go in the 90s, and we used to be able to see Blue Cult in Kansas and all our favorite people, and now we can't even touch them. We can't even touch a ticket.
Well, you know, I very often talk about the bill at various places. My favorite is probably in St. Louis, the Opera House there. And they'll have like 14 great doo-wop acts, half of whom had number one records at the time, big hit records anyway. And the tickets were $1.50. So, yes. So sure, you know, I mean, those days are long gone. But when you talk about not affording to go to a concert, the same thing is true with Major League Sports, for instance. I don't know how many families of four can afford to go out to a Major League Baseball game. Thank God for Triple A teams.
I don't know anything about sports.
Well, it's ridiculous. But it's ridiculously expensive. Is the same deal. So I don't know. I would be interesting to find out more about this dynamic pricing model, because something tells me there are a ton of snafus there, intentional or not.
Yeah, I know. I know, because I was saying I've never seen the Rolling Stones, and somebody said they're a couple $1,000 a ticket.
I don't know.
Not even for good seats, you know?
Well, and you know, when you think about that, early rock and roll, or even the 60s rock and roll, which isn't that early, most of these performers were virtually kids. Now you're saying, I've never seen a group who's in their 80s. You're looking at octogenarians.
He's 80.
That's correct. Yes. Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure what the fascination is, but yeah. Well,
and
you know,
some of the bands don't even have original members. Like,
well, of course,
Queen.
Not.
Queen doesn't even have Freddie Mercury anymore.
Well, that one's well known, obviously, because we all know he's not with us. But many of these groups actually are just buying the name. I've mentioned that before, like Motown sell, or they used to, I don't know, I don't even know who owns Motown anymore, but in the Berry Gordy days, they used to sell names. And so, you know, yes, a group bought the Marvelettes. And I had a friend who, I'm going to go see the Marvelettes. And, no, you're not. So...
And Journey doesn't have Steve Perry singing lead anymore, and Kansas doesn't have Steve Walsh singing lead anymore.
Well, right, so, but the question is, why are people still going?
Yeah, that's what I wonder. That's what I wonder. And Leonard Skinner doesn't even have any original members anymore.
But you see, everybody knows what happened to them. You can't miss the plane crash, so why are you going to see this? You know, unless... By the way, if they'll give me Leonard Skinner from a Beyond the Grave, I'll go to that, even if they don't play anything. But so far, nobody's been offering me anybody from Beyond the Grave.
And it's like the time that I grew up in, it's like what, for my mother's generation, everybody remembers where they were when JFK died. My generation, everybody remembers where they were when they heard Leonard Skinner crash, you know?
Yeah. Now, I just looked up, by the way, they're saying the average Rolling Stone ticket is $377, and some are as cheap as $66. But when I was looking at this, what I realized, and maybe this is, and again, I haven't really looked into it, but maybe this is one of the things that's of concern in the Ticketmaster issue, is how many of these tickets wind up being controlled by third parties who buy blocks of tickets and then are reselling.
Like on StubHub?
On whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know,
well,
I don't know.
Even that's expensive.
So the cheapest price for a Rolling Stone ticket is $66. I don't know if you're in the parking lot or not, but they do have them.
Yeah, that's got to be way up there in the nosebleed section.
Yeah, so there you go.
The other thing I wanted to bring up was I'm outraged at the Innocence Project. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but I followed this case. I followed every detail of this case. They have now taken up the case of Scott Peterson.
They think he's innocent?
I guess they do.
Yeah, this was the Lacey Peterson case, and I don't know how many people will remember this, but it was a horrific murder, because she was virtually about to give birth to her first child, and allegedly her husband, Scott, who was none too pleased she was going to have a child, and he made that well known, allegedly he killed her. But
who lied about everything, who was cheating on her, and who lied about everything.
Well, part of what broke it open was the woman he was cheating with, who had no idea there was a Lacey Peterson, the gal Amber Fry in Fresno, who came forth when she heard about this and said, "Oh, I have something to add." And she
was at her memorial and on the phone with Amber Fry and telling her that he was in Paris, at the Eiffel Tower.
Right. So,
I mean, he was a big liar. Plus, he was seen the morning that the morning of, was it Christmas morning, I think? He was seen in a boat dumping something into the water.
Yes.
Like, hello, right where the bodies were found.
Yeah, much like the Ode to Billy Joe, yes. But what is interesting to me is that the Innocence Project, which is a Los Angeles group, takes up the case of people who have been, they believe, wrongfully convicted. Now, what on earth is their evidence?
I don't know. They were saying something. I saw it on the national news, and they said it was something to do with a burglary that happened across the street on either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, and a burned-out van.
All right. Well, I'll wait. I'll wait, obviously, until I hear what their evidence is. But obviously, if they're filing motions, they think they're onto something. But it'd be fascinating to know what that is. And they're not. No. I don't think they've divulged that yet. They just announced that they're taking it up.
He's a big liar, and I will never believe he's innocent.
Well,
I don't care what the evidence is. I will never believe he's innocent.
Yeah, that's right. Never mind the facts. But we'll. how superfluous are we?
I saw him pile lie on top of lie on top of lie.
Lie like a rug.
He was gone.
Yes.
He didn't care that she was dead. He didn't go out looking for her. He didn't do anything.
All right. There's no doubt that he was glad she was dead. I would agree with that from all accounts. That does not necessarily translate to he, in fact, killed her. And so he might have, but what I want to know is what does the Innocence Project have? Because usually the cases they go after are pretty interesting in terms of being full of holes in terms of investigation and proof and all that. So, you know, if Scott Peterson's going to be convicted for being a bad guy, yeah, absolutely. But when you're talking about murder, I'm curious, what do they have that they think changes the outcome? And I don't know. You don't either.
Yeah.
And
like I said, they were just talking about a burglary and a dog.
Well, let's find out what they have. I mean, I know there are people who absolutely don't want this overturned because even if he didn't do it, they don't like him. I understand that. He was pretty despicable all the way around.
I believe he did.
Well,
I believe he did it.
Well, I want to find out what the Innocence Project has that they're wondering.
Yeah, I'd like to know. Maybe if that detective Chuck never calls in anymore, maybe he knows something about it.
Well, I think he's taken up normal sleeping habits, which...
Okay.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
You always say sleep is sacred.
It is sacred. Get as much of it as you can. So, yeah, whenever sleep is going to creep up on me, I let it. So I advise the same advice for anybody. But now I'm going to look it up to see, did the L.A. Innocence Project, the early articles just said they were going to take up the case, but they didn't say why. So let's find out why.
It was on the national news today.
Yeah, but why?
That's all I got out of
it.
Yeah, they didn't go into detail.
Yeah, well, that's what we want to know. Expiring minds want to know. All right.
Definitely.
All right. Well, good deal. Well, thanks. I appreciate it, Leah. All right.
Thanks, Raleigh.
So,
bye.
Good deal. All right. So I'll look to see if the Innocence Project anywhere online. I'll do that during this next commercial respite. If the Innocence Project anywhere online is saying, what is it that has caused them to decide that this is the case to exonerate? Interesting stuff. We'll get to Sam and Gurney. We'll get to you, too, if you call 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
See, paint the world so bright.
course, that's Minnie Riperton, Edge of a Dream. What a wonderful song. It was Mark in Wilmington who wanted to hear that. Yeah, Stevie Wonder produced it. He's playing piano, too. 1974 on Epic. It's the flip side of Loving You. Yeah, they should have turned it over. All right, so that said, we'll find out what's going on in the world at large from WGN Radio News on WGN Radio.
Everybody young and old, learn how to rock and roll. Listen, here's something new. Everybody chunk and do.
Come on.
Foot stomping, foot stomping, foot stomping, foot stomping, foot stomping, foot stomping, foot stomping.
I'm Raleigh James. The Flares. By that time, they were spelling it F-L-A-R-E-S. Yeah, it started out F-L-A-I-R-S. Well, it started out with a complete other name, and the Bahari Brothers renamed them. That was Cornell Gunter was in that group, and Richard Berry was in that group. We were talking about last night with Cleveland Dennis about that. But when Foot Stompin' came out, they were no longer involved with the Bahari Brothers. That was on Felsted, which, like, what is Felsted? It's a British label, actually. I remember looking that up years ago because I thought, who is this guy? Well, like I say, it was, I think it was a neighborhood, but a British label. 1961 on Felsted, and Cleveland Dennis wanted to hear that. 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. So we got Sam and Gurney. How's it going, Sam?
Hey, Raleigh, I'm doing pretty good tonight. I'm hoping you can shout out to Pat Baugh out in Seattle, Washington. He's a new listener that I just brought on tonight. He's never heard your program before, so he is tuned in.
Hey, Pat, we're glad to have you. Call.
Yeah, and he, but I have to share this hilarious moment. About 2 hours ago, I got a phone call from Pat.
Uh-huh.
Says, Sam, I don't know what's going on, but he said his worker didn't show up at 7 o'clock this morning.
Uh-huh.
And he said it's 9:30. He says the sun still hasn't risen.
No.
He was 12 hours off.
No. And, you know, I think all of us have done that at some point, gone to sleep.
I've done it.
Yeah, yeah. Usually it's just that we, you know, we've taken a short nap and we think it's the next day. But what was his situation?
He fell asleep for 12 minutes. He went to sleep. He came in, he fell asleep for 12 minutes.
Yep. Yep. He's not alone. I think every one of us has done this.
Well, we have, and I have, certainly. I've done it at least a half a dozen times. But anyway, I thought it was a hilarious moment, but he's tuned into you for the first time, and so I just wanted to shout out and welcome him to your listening audience.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing from him. Thanks for calling, Sam. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. So, yeah, we can talk Seattle, Dawn in the Good Times, or somebody. All right. So, well, they're trying to think of other local groups I liked, but I think might start and end with Dawn in the Good Times. I'm not okay. Maybe the Wailers. I don't know. The Fleetwoods. And I still want to know, by the way, speaking of the Fleetwoods, you know, the Fleetwoods have gone down in legal infamy, one of them anyway, and that's Gary Troxell, who was the guy singer of the three. And he actually had a case that went to the Supreme Court, and he lost on grandfather's rights. He and his wife were the grandparents of a child that was conceived. His son was the father, and I think his son committed suicide. And they had visitation rights, but then the mother of the child remarried and rescinded those rights. And so Gary Troxell and his wife sued to try and get grandparents' rights. And, you know, it's a heartbreaking thing. On a legal perspective, of course, I agree with the decision, but on a personal journey, I don't. And I've looked several times for those two kids, those two grandkids, they were girls, to find out, did they ever reunite with Gary? And I don't know. So if you do, let me know. So, yeah, I've heard him in many interviews, but I've never actually heard him tackling that. And hopefully there was some type of reunion that that worked out for everybody. All right. So Marianne is in Chicago. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. How are you?
I can't complain.
Oh, we're getting more snow, but that's good because we had spring today. It was like 25 degrees.
How nice.
It was so nice.
Yeah. Well, thank God it wasn't 35 because then everything would melt and then freeze over.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's right. That's the condition you never want. You know, I'll take anything but that.
But I called because I heard you and Leah talking about Scott Peterson.
Yes.
And then it brought to mind, we have our own Peterson here in Bolingbrook.
The lovely Drew. The lovely Drew. Yes, police sergeant convicted of, I guess that was like 2012. That was the third wife, Kathleen Savio, I think. But now the deal is that apparently it was going to be reopened. There were other wives that maybe he did away with. What's the latest?
I haven't heard him too much about him too much lately. And just when I heard you guys talking about Scott, I thought, what is it with the Peterson name?
Nothing. And it's terrible because I have a former listener, his name was Scott Peterson, who lived not far from Scott Peterson. And you can only imagine the mix-up that poor guy went through.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a shame. He's a great songwriter, too. But nonetheless.
The last time I heard anything about him was a couple years ago. He wanted to go back to court. And they were transporting him, like, from the jail to the van to the court, and he's waving at the photographers and smiling away and stuff, and I'm like, ooh, just creepy.
Well,
but there was another wife that went missing. That,
no,
too,
I know.
Right?
Oh, absolutely. But this is it. There was, and you know, I haven't heard about this in a while, but yeah, but last year, or might be 2 years ago now, but his lawyer, Joel Brodsky was the guy's name. He was going to release confidential information that would have been protected by attorney-client privilege, but he thought the information was incendiary enough that it should be out there. And so then there was the issue where Stacy Peterson's sister, Cassandra, wanted to, you know, stand up for him being able to do this and all. And I don't know what happened, nor do I know if Brodsky, you know, because we still don't know where Stacy Peterson is. All right. So if he knows that, then that's a question as well. So, yeah, remember when he was almost 50 years old, he married a teenager. Stacy Kales. And she was, like, working at a hotel in Downers Grove or something. And her mother reported her missing in 1998. Now, the two cases are not necessarily linked, but the question is this the information his lawyer has? And I don't know.
Didn't the lawyer resign himself from being his lawyer so he could give that information?
Well, yes, but you see, that's not, you can't really do that, all right? You can't decide, okay, well, I won't be a lawyer anymore. Now I'll just tell all my clients' secrets. No,
I'm
not no.
And I'm going to tell everybody about you.
You can't do that. And,
Why not?
Well, I can think of a lot of reasons, but here is the deal. On top of all the things that you would know and that the Bar Association would tell you, he has a gag order not to disclose. And so that went to court. But the question is, does he know anything about Stacy? And that's the other wife you're talking about. Like I say, she was 19 years old. Then her mother reports her missing. And, you know, but what's the deal? And so she legally adopted Kathleen Savio's children. And she was, you know, supposedly doing well, completing a degree in nursing when she disappeared suddenly in 2007. And her sister, Cassandra, the one who wants Brodsky to open up the records, reported it saying she has not showed up anywhere. And so then Peterson calls her and says, she's left me for another man. Well, all right, there were questions about that. She was driving a Pontiac Grand Am, and that was found at the Bolingbrook, the little GA airport there. And she's still a missing person to this day. And I think there's still a website. And Joel Brodsky, the lawyer, he was interviewed. Remember that Marcia Clark, that woman who was the L.A. attorney against O.J.? Well, she had a little TV show. And she interviewed Joel Brodsky. And he claims that he has information as to what happened to Stacy. And he says, when Drew passes away, she'll be found. Well, and he didn't say anything else. Well, of course, that's what then led to the gag order and all this stuff.
You know, and that's interesting. And look at the similarities.
Well, you know,
Peterson, Stacy, Lacey.
It is kind of interesting.
I mean, I know they're not related.
No,
but it's,
and in any way. But, you know, what's terrible is, on the one hand, I live for these stories because I'm the original soap opera queen. I've never seen a tabloid I don't love. But what I hate about this is not a script writer. These are real people. And it's just heartbreaking.
Well, you know how they always say, you couldn't write this stuff, right?
Well, if you did,
when it's real.
Right, exactly. Half the stuff, if you write it, be thrown out. They'd say, well, that's not believable. Exactly. So, you know, and I wonder what Vicki Connolly, that was the second wife who divorced Drew when he was apparently taking up with Kathleen. And I wonder, what on earth does she think, you know? Or Carol Brown, that was a high school girlfriend. And she...
they all think, wow, I dodged a bullet.
Yeah, no, I can't
literally
imagine. Yeah, yeah. So I would. It would be a cold chill down my spine. But, yeah, we don't know where Stacy Peterson is.
I think there was a little abuse of power on his side, that he was a cop. And
no, you think?
Looking and went after all these young girls that were impressed by that.
Yeah, think? All right, I guess. All right, good deal. Well, maybe we'll hear something. Yeah, we all would like Brodsky to talk. But on the other hand, we would not like Brodsky to talk, because I don't know, if he gets to talk, I don't think I'd ever confide in an attorney again.
Well, don't do nothing bad.
Well, I don't. I'm boring. Are you kidding? The worst thing I do is I don't fall asleep till the sun is up, and then I don't wake up till it's almost dark again. So that's about my problem.
Oh, right. Yeah, and that man that called up and said his friend fell asleep and thought it was a different day or
something.
Yeah,
you've done that, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, but this happened to a friend of mine recently. She took a nap and got up and said, oh, my God, I'm supposed to be at the hospital for my infusion.
Oh, no, she didn't go, did she?
She gets dressed, gets in her car. Doesn't dawn on her that it's dark out. Her appointment was for 8 in the morning.
Oh, God.
She gets to the hospital, and the door is locked, so she goes to the emergency. They let her in, and she goes, yeah, I'm here for my infusion. And they go, your infusion is at 9 o'clock in the morning, not 9 o'clock at night. That's what she's like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
she
that's
said,
when
I
you...
I took a short nap, and I thought I slept through the night.
We've all done it. Absolutely. All right. Good to hear from you, Marianne. Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
All right. So 888-876-5593. We'll talk to James from Oregon about pet rocks. But does your home feel chilly? Utility bills seem high? Do you wonder if your home is properly insulated? PermaSeal can help with that. If you're not testing, you're guessing. PermaSeal can show you just how much energy loss your home is experiencing and precisely where those air leaks are. Make your home feel more comfortable and substantially lower those utility bills. For a free, honest insulation estimate, call PermaSeal at 800-421-7325. That's 800-421-SEAL. Or visit permaseal.net.
To an ordinary girl. carnival dancers leap from the page when Nori Elinda takes to the stage, strums her guitar and my heartstrings resonate. Sequins of flame as she twirls all around, lights up the stage like an angel's gown. Who would have guessed that under that dress she's an ordinary girl? Tying the shoes in the doorway, walking her dogs in the rain. I'll never have my princess divine, but the ordinary girl is mine.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that's Scott Pedersen, not Peterson, although I had the misfortune of living right by him. All right, and yeah, in the Bay Area, and he was just a terrific songwriter, and I don't know that any of his stuff was released, but years ago when all hell was breaking loose or about to in 2008, he sent me The Bubble Man, which maybe we'll play that later. I thought was just right on. And at that point, I said, got anything else? He said, well, I got Nori Elinda, and just loved it. So, all right, I don't know where he is now. Hopefully still writing and still happy and all that. But he certainly isn't Scott Peterson, that's for sure. So I'm looking up the deal on the Innocence Project here. And apparently their comment is that it's the information that was withheld that they're after, not so much in terms of that they necessarily know anything, but there is apparently over 1,000 pages of information that didn't make it to the trial. So I'll try to see if we can find out what that is, but that's what I got so far. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888-Raleigh. And I think we take it to the top of the hour, but I'm not 100% sure anymore. So Adam can correct me if I'm wrong. Otherwise, I'll just prattle on and see what Bruce and Elwood has to say for his bad self. Hello, Bruce. What's up, Bruce?
Hi, Raleigh.
How are you?
Hi, Raleigh. How you doing?
All right.
I'm doing pretty good. I just had two quick things on that Drew Peterson.
Yeah.
One of them is, remember the situation I was telling you about, my situation last week with the me being a suspect and everything?
Yes.
That was the same time in the same county.
Oh,
like
no.
20 miles from Bolingbrook.
Oh, no. Oh,
and when they were arresting Drew, I knew they were just coming to get me.
That's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, my wife, it was just a little bit ahead. But the other thing is, he got more time, if you look it up. He put out a hit on the district attorney for our county.
Yes.
James Glasgow.
Yes.
From prison. And he got more time for that than he did for the Savio murder.
Right. Right, I did hear about that, but I really wonder about the missing fourth wife.
Well, they claim the claim at that time is she isn't even really too far from where I live. The river goes not too far from my house where they thought the blue barrel was.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm only like 5 miles from the Des Plaines River, and that's where they think the blue barrel went floating down.
I don't know. So,
yeah, but it was. The same time I'm waiting for a final death certificate, I'm watching him on TV, and I'm sitting at home thinking, I just know they're waiting to come and arrest me.
Oh, jeez. Oh, it's all you need on top of everything else. But you're sounding good, so I assume you've made a full recovery?
Yeah, I'm doing a little better every day. I'm getting out, trying to keep a good attitude, you know?
Oh, that's the hardest part.
I'm finally out of the pain of all the stuff I had going on in my stomach that I should have took care of years ago.
Oh, man, and isn't that a relief? And then you say to yourself, why did I wait this long?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, that's tremendous. Well, hopefully it's only straight uphill from here.
I hope so.
All right. Well, keep me posted. Thanks.
Okay. You guys take care of yourself.
You too. All right, so Bruce is sounding strong and good. That's excellent. All right, we'll get to James from Oregon at the beginning of next hour, actually. We're going to talk pet rocks. That was a great invention, too, but what it wasn't the rock. I still have my rock. It was the booklet that came with it. what you could do with your pet rock. But it was a great little device. Yeah, there are a number of things like that that I liked, where it was the instruction manual, not the product itself. So we can talk about pet rocks. And but like I said, I still have mine. And it continues to behave just as it did the moment I first unwrapped it. All right, so all that and more is coming up right here on WGN Radio.
Hey, you! Rock some more. Come out of here on the floor. Honey, let's rock some more, yeah. Now when you get out here, don't you have no fear. Put your hands on your hip and let your backbone slip and work out.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and of course that's Jackie Wilson. Yes, a hit, she's playing a hit. Yeah, well, Dave and LaSalle wanted to hear it, 1963 on Brunswick. Yeah, so 888-876-5593, love Jackie Wilson. For me, it was the fast stuff, and for other Jackie Wilson fans, like Berry Gordy, it was the ballads. In fact, Berry had said never heard a singer as good, and that's probably true, but yeah, the ballads didn't do it for me with Jackie, but boy, a lot of that fast stuff, and a lot of it that wasn't really that popular, just wonderful, wonderful songs. So, of course, Baby Workout was huge. 888-876-5593. And I got an email from EM, and thank you, talking about Drew Peterson's attorney, who has failed to sell his tell-all documentary. And apparently, this goes back about a year and a half ago, when the attorney was on WGN Investigates, and Joel Brodsky is the attorney's name, and he was hinting toward the sin of the legal profession, breaking attorney-client privilege, of what happened to two of Peterson's, Drew Peterson in this case, four wives. And of course that led to gagging by the courts and all that. Well, apparently more than that, it's led to his financial downfall. And this WGN looked at records from a federal lawsuit that Brodsky filed against an entertainment lawyer who was working with a production company on a documentary on the Peterson case. And the gist of it was that the lawyer was wanting a one-time payment of $55,000 and then a one-third interest in the proceeds if the project was sold. And there were also a number of emails in court filings where the financial difficulties of Brodsky were delineated, including possibly losing control of a warehouse and storage facility full of materials, including audio and video recordings relevant to the Peterson case. Well, of course he'd add that, whether it was or not, because that's one of the eyebrow-raising kind of things. And so apparently Brodsky absolutely denied that money was a motivator. And who knows? But what it seems is everybody's got an underside in this story. And he said, it wasn't just me selling information and walking away. It was doing a documentary and telling the entire story, which is much deeper than Stacy or even Stacy and Kathy. There's a lot more here. There's other victims. Yeah. And so apparently he claims that his knowledge is backed by records in his possession. Now, hopefully I'm almost allergic to the story. Hopefully, those are not the records that are endangered by lack of payment from storage fees. But you know the deal, the outline of the story, to say the least. But yeah, just losing it with sneezing there. The documentary was with Tri American Productions, and of course the upshot was the lawsuit where Brodsky had sued for a breach of fiduciary duty. I do not know what happened there. And then, of course, you know, lawsuits are involved, so all the accusations are flying in terms of who did what to whom, and who knows. But as far as I know, the story has not been told, but so hopefully, for all of our sakes, hopefully it will be told. And I can understand why Brodsky is saying, well, yeah, but I want to be financially whole in this. Well, I don't know what else led to his financial woes, but nonetheless, I hope he didn't lose the material, and I hope one day the story will come out one way or another. All right, so James in Oregon, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, good evening. Yeah, I was interested in that Peterson stuff here, and I remember when Scott Peterson, and I also thought, for some reason, I thought Peterson and the Chicago area, I thought his name was also Scott.
No, it was Drew.
It was Drew.
It was Drew.
I'm just wondering how many guys out there by the name of Scott Peterson or Drew Peterson change their names after that so they could be able to get a date. You know?
Yeah, boy, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, especially if they were like 22 at the time and truly dating. I don't know.
I have a good friend down in Arizona. He just retired as a Arizona Highway Patrolman, and his last name's Peterson. I don't think he killed anybody.
Well, let's face it, it's a fairly common last name.
Yeah. He used to patrol that section of highway up around north of the canyon there. It's like the Utah area, but it's Arizona.
Yes, near Page.
He patrolled that area. Actually, he and his family lived in Utah because that was the closest place.
I'll bet you he's got stories because there are also a lot of FLDS areas there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he said he pulled people over and they wouldn't recognize state police or city police, but they recognized the sheriff.
Right.
The sheriff is the only legal authority, and so he said, "No problem." He says he'd take them down to the Kingman. That was the closest Arizona jail, and he said, "Put them in there." And he says, "Okay, when the Utah sheriff comes down and gets you, you know."
Oh geez.
That's where you're gonna sit and that. But usually he just called. If they didn't give him a hard time, he just called the sheriff from Utah or Arizona sheriff, and they'd come up and arrest him.
Oh man!
You know, for stuff like that. But then he moved down to the Flagstaff area. That's where he grew up at, and all that. So he patrolled 40,
sure,
and that kind of stuff like that.
Sure, all of Coconino County. It's gotten really expensive, I'll tell you that.
Oh yeah. He grew there. He grew up there, so I guess he got his foot in early, you know, but. He used to tell me about, he was also part of the Navajo police.
Uh-huh.
They licensed him or certified him.
Uh-huh.
He said he'd chase the guys, and they'd head on to the Navajo reservation and thinking he couldn't do anything. And then he'd stop. And he said, well, you're an Arizona cop. And he says, oh, let me show you my Navajo badge, you know. and then he'd arrest him as a Navajo police thing like that. But I was interested in that. You're talking about that little girl, the young lady that came up with that hamster thing. Well, that's useful.
Yeah.
I could never figure out the pet. And then now I don't want to say bad things, but because you see you have one.
Well, no, I mean,
pet rocks,
yeah. It was the only thing about the pet rock was the book. Like I say, it was a little book, and that was the joke. And it was an advertising guy, Gary Dahl, he put this together, and it just took off, you know, tongue in cheek. But without the book, the pet rock meant nothing. You had to have the package, you know, as far as that goes.
And did they not sell accessories?
Oh, yeah, there were all sorts of things. But, of course, this all stemmed from, you know, the advertising guy knew that a number of people did not want to have pets because of the care for them. They didn't want it. And by the way, I say good for them. I'm glad they admitted it rather than, you know, God forbid, got a dog or a cat and then just did not treat it right. You know, that'd be terrible. But so so the whole thing was a pimp on that. And you know, I still have a little manual, and it's it was a terrific thing. And you know, I got that. It was 75, and I got the, you know, the theory behind it. Like I say, it was just the manual. And it was funny for a year. And you know, it had packaging. It had the rock on, you know, a little nest of something, just crazy. Yeah. But it was the packaging and all that stuff. They still sell it as far as that goes. But you know, other things I absolutely don't get, and things that take off, and it's invariably things that, you know, you wouldn't normally like Cabbage Patch dolls, just becomes only for a period of time, but just huge.
Or Beanie Babies.
Beanie Babies. Well, and Beanie Babies, of course, made it to the collectibles market. So now, depending on your Beanie Baby, it has some value, you know, and probably not anything you or I would have.
Yeah.
But sure.
My wife's got two great big boxes full of Beanie Babies.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
you don't know how many meals, kids' meals, I had to buy at McDonald's to get the little ones, you know.
Oh, that, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And
then they would say to me, well, do you want the meal too? I want the meal too. The meal's for me, the Beanie Babies is a wife.
Right, right. But, but the book was great. It was a hoot. And, you know, as far as that goes, and that's why you got it. But I'll never really understand why some things just take off. You know, we were talking about that with regard to, you know, the Beatles and why when they did, you know, that they became so big so quickly. And we talked a lot about that. But, you know, why is it, for instance, why is it that Barbie dolls became huge enough that it was one of the most successful movies last year?
You know, the
Barbie doll was a sex toy in Germany, for God's sakes. That's all it was when it was ripped off. And I'm sure there's a lot of socioeconomic studies. I'm sure it's more than one PhD dissertation. But to me, you know, I sure wish we could predict it. Because, boy, if you knew ahead of time, that would be tremendous. Yeah. But I don't.
I was gonna package something like that one time, and you know, to do it right. But all I ended up was a building full of rocks or something, you know.
Right.
When I tried to do it. Yeah. Hey, I was going to ask you, I heard a lady, I was surprised. I mean, she's been around a while, Lucinda Williams.
Okay.
She was on the Grand Ole Opry, did her debut, I think last week or the week before. And I asked my daughter, I said, you ever hear of this Lucinda Williams? And she said, oh, yeah, she's been around a while, you know.
She's a Grammy winner.
Yeah, I didn't know all this stuff. I just thought she was some older lady making her debut, you know.
Well, yeah, another overnight sensation that only took 50 years. Yeah, she's 70 years old, and she's a Louisiana gal. She's from Lake Charles, I think. But she has hit as far as that goes. Late 70s, 1980s, that's when she recorded a couple of albums, and I think 88 was a big album for her. And then I
called her up on my radio thing here, and she they had some duets with Willie Nelson.
Uh-huh.
A lot of other country singers and stuff. I guess that's what she is, a country singer.
Yeah.
Or that type. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was one of the many people who would play live in Austin. And, you know, it was somewhat of a blend probably. And, but sure, she was living in the South. None of it, you know, even though a lot of this stuff had critical acclaim, none of these were hits. I don't think she had a hit until damn near 2000. So it was not, when you look at these 80s things or, you know, late 70s things, there wasn't any you know, I guess as a songwriter, you know, she was revered. But again, you're not talking her early years. That's for absolute sure. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know you'd be surprised that a few months ago, Sean Cassidy made his debut on the Grand Ole Opry. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Is he even alive?
Sean Cassidy is. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess he would be. You know, that's terrible to say, but
his brother's dead.
Well, yeah, of course, no. But yeah. Sean would be in his mid 60s now. But what has he been doing for the last, I don't know, 40 years?
He said that when they interviewed him a little bit, because they interview him a little bit, and he's doing more production work, I guess, or stuff like that in TV shows and stuff like that.
Okay.
That's kind of what he said he's been doing, yeah.
All right.
And then they had Barry Williams, not too long ago, too. He's, you know, he was on there doing his debut.
I'll be darned.
So I said, they're reaching out. I mean, I'm not saying bad singer, I mean, but I just wouldn't think they would be the ones to make the debut on the Grand Ole Opry, but I don't think they follow any genre anymore for the debuts.
Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah.
No, I had no idea. I hadn't, you know, when I say he was alive, I hadn't thought about him in a long time. So, well, good for him.
Well, I was hoping he didn't do Ron Ron or anything.
Oh, God. Yeah, right. No.
Yeah. And I asked my daughter, because she's in that age now, that she, you know, she was the little teeny bopper back then, them days.
Yeah.
I said, you know, Sean Cassidy was on there. I remember you girls had the album. She said, oh, yeah, you know. She was talking about that, and then the Bay City Rollers or something like that. Was it Bay City Rollers? Were they bubblegum? She called it bubblegum.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that, but they were certainly a kid favorite.
You know? Yeah.
But I was just looking this up, and apparently, you're right. He has some very interesting writer's credits as far as that goes, including 8 episodes of New Amsterdam. And it was even executive producer on New Amsterdam. Good for him. And number of other stuff. So obviously he's got some good credits. That's excellent. Well, I guess there will be no need for a charity drive. That's good.
No, not for him.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, between his dad and his mom, he should be okay, huh?
Well, you know, I mean, hopefully whatever it is he... Yeah, and Shirley Jones. Yeah. Hopefully whatever it is he made it on his own. But, but why not?
Yeah.
But Bay City Rollers, and you say, whatever happened to those guys, Woody Wood and all of those? I don't know. And they've been around from early years. I think they were around in the time the Beatles were starting up, or at least having hits. So
one daughter, her boyfriend's... does some kind of production work now for the Little Feet, and they're down in Mexico right now, some resort now. And he flew out Monday, I think it was, down there. And,
all right.
And from Nashville. Yeah, so I mean, it's these old groups, man. You're talking about they're in their 80s, some of them, those guys, you know.
Well.
And they're out there making a living at it again.
It's amazing. And of course they've got a fan base, and many of them of course go back to many years ago, but it still makes me wonder on some of these where are the new people today. And of course we have Taylor Swift, but we don't have a whole lot of them.
No.
And you know.
Well, you know that what is interesting is on the, cuz I listen to Grand Ole Opry a lot, and maybe one should, but it's like they talk about how many hits they've got, not hit songs, but how many they put their stuff up on YouTube or Spotify or something like that, and that's where these guys are getting known from. You know?
that's where anyone is getting money from at this point in time. I mean, streaming is over 75% of the music business income now, so they're not alone there. All right. Well, wonderful to talk to you as always.
Okay, well, we'll listen to the radio for the rest of the night.
I appreciate that. All right, so 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, Sil Austin, Slow Walk, 1956 on Mercury, and Dave from LaSalle asked for that as well. Happy to play it. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And if all else fails, I got the tabloids. But there were a few stories that I thought were interesting tonight. Let me find them. And for one thing, I was trying to see any more on either Drew or Scott Peterson, but it seems with the Scott Peterson story that... It's interesting, as I was saying, they claim they have the Innocence Project, 1,000 pages of evidence that were not admitted. Obviously, the courts are somewhat immediately downplaying that, but what will happen, who knows, because it was just filed. All right, so other stories we have? Well, there was the Fruity Fracas in New Hampshire in the produce section of a grocery store in Tilton. Apparently, a watermelon was used as an assault, and Sergeant Andrew Semin of the Tilton Police confirmed that they are investigating someone going to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries from being struck by a produce item, otherwise known as a watermelon. A worker answered the phone when journalists called and said, "We have been instructed not to say anything about that." So, if you can't eat it, throw it, I guess. I don't know if you noticed King. King was a rescue dog at a rescue in Tempe, Arizona, and is a fascinating little story, not because of King, although I'll get to that, but what the cop did, but it was all on camera. King apparently was quite the organizer. He enjoyed a brief reign among his shelter buddies. After midnight one night, he managed not only to break out of his own kennel, but was able to bust out several other dogs. And then he found a stash of food, enjoyed a little feast, had a small party. Now, in the meantime, alarms were triggered by King's actions, and the police showed up. And, because the alarms went off. And so they're looking for the intruder, and they finally realize the intruder is, of course, King. Now, what was interesting is, as I say, all of this was on camera, is the responding officer, after rounding up King and getting him back into a kennel and secured, actually cleaned the place. I kid you not. Took a broom, cleaned up after King's free-for-all, and never said a word. And, of course, then it went viral on the news because everybody was pretty amazed at that. King, they say, is no longer looking for a home. They didn't explain any more than that, and I thought, God, I hope they didn't euthanize him. I don't know what happened to King. And then we have Rodney Holbrook. He's a 75-year-old retired postman. And he'd been noticing for a couple of months that there were small messes in his shed that were mysteriously being tidied overnight. So he couldn't understand that. Because unlike King, who made a mess in the shelter, this guy is finding that his shed is being cleaned. And so he set up a camera, And what he found was a small mouse that actually would pick up pegs and corks and nuts and bolts and bird food and would sort them and put them in, you know, away from the clutter of the shed. And he's saying, 99 times out of 100. Now, I assume the guy's been watching him for a while to have those figures, but this mouse will tidy up the area all night. And he said, I don't even bother to tidy up now. I'll leave things out of the box, and they're back in their place by morning. He said, I've also added different things to the desk to see if it can lift it. Hasn't been that hardy, but nonetheless, I guess whatever gets you through the night. We now have Lulu Lotus. She's from Ontario. A Guinness Book World Record is now hers for an impressive skill. She blew a 44-decibel whistle through her nose. UPI reported this on January 9th when they ran out of things to discuss. Apparently, she visited the Air Acoustics Engineering Limited Lab to have her whistle measured in a special room. Her 5-year-old son recently discovered that he, too, has the nose-whistling ability. Yes, it would be a dream come true if he could beat my record one day. Well, everybody's got to have a goal. Well, what else do we have? We've got, everybody's heard about the story about Alaskan Airlines. It lost the lost the door plug, which is actually, you know, the size of the door, obviously, at 16,000 feet. But the interesting part are the human interest stories. When the panel flew off and the hole gaped, you know, open, the guy who was, thank God, sitting in the center seat and strapped in, lost his computer and his iPhone, just obviously sucked right out of there, along with his shirt. Interesting. But what happened right after that is that the phone was discovered. Yeah. A motorist found the phone, posted a picture on X showing the intact screen and the battery life, 44% remaining. It's pretty clean, no scratches on it, sitting under a bush. And the NTSB said, all found phones will be returned to their owners. What, there are more? I don't know. But in the meantime, the phone is fine. And so is the kid. The kid was sitting next to his mother when the door panel blew wide open. And like I say, what you see in the size of that hole, it's the size of the door, you know, is amazing. And to think that that the wind could be so severe, you'd expect his phone and his computer to go, that it could tear the shirt off of him. But like I say, thank God he was buckled up because it didn't take him with it. But just alarming. When I saw that, I started to read about other accidents, you know, people being sucked out of planes. You're always hearing about this. I mean, well, not every day, obviously, but, you know, far too often than not. A couple times a year, you'll read one of these stories. But what I hadn't read until recently was pilots being sucked out of cockpits. And there was one guy, and he's alive to tell about it, on British Air. And he was the pilot, and he made the mistake of loosening his seatbelt until all hell broke loose, because what happened was the window popped off because it had been improperly maintained and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, he was basically a goner. But as he was going out, there was a flight attendant who had just entered the cockpit when all hell was breaking loose, and he grabbed the pilot's ankles to keep him in the plane, well, part of him anyway. And the other part was just plastered to the plane, and they managed to land, and the guy managed to live. He had some frostbite, but he was back flying within like 6 months. He retired recently, still alive, but so I think there's a lesson here. If you do decide you're flying, for God's sakes, keep the seatbelt on. Yeah, I know how many people get lax about that, but there's more than a few cases that wouldn't be worth it with us today if they hadn't been safely buckled in. All right, so now we have the world's ugliest lawn competition. The Guardian reported about this last week. The marsupials have actually liberated me from ever having to mow again, says Kathleen Murray. I'm all for guilt-free weekends, especially since my ex-husband left with the lawnmower in 2016. Now, when I heard that, must have been a really good-looking Toro. Yeah, all right. The contest began in Sweden's ugliest lawn, which was conceived to encourage water saving and environmentally friendly gardening. And there were a number of submissions last year. All of them were hideous and probably worthy of winning. But the winner was particularly awful. And What is interesting is that the winner's comment was, "It brings me a lot of joy to see all the little creatures who now feel safe to come out during the day in my yard." Well, whatever gets you through the day, I guess, in this state. Now, Wayne State University, they're in the news. They've announced their 15th annual list of long-lost words that should be resurrected. The Word Warriors program has identified blatherskite, means nonsense. Kerglef, the shock felt upon diving into cold water is a kerglef. Yeah. Rawgabbit, a person who speaks confidently but ignorantly. Oh, hell, that's half of, what am I saying, half? That's most of Congress. And Pawky, having a cynical sense of humor, among others. So, there you have it. What words would you like to see come back? Or what didn't you know were even gone? Then, what else do we have? Back to airplanes for a moment. We have Air Canada. Flight was preparing to leave from Toronto to Dubai. A passenger just boarded. Opened a cabin door, stepped out, and fell 20 feet to the ground. Yeah, the passenger was injured. Emergency services were called. The flight was delayed for an hour. They're saying there was no explanation for why the person jumped out. Well, I don't know. You're making it seem very easy. Just open the cabin door. It nobody seemed to notice. There's a bigger story here, and I think we're never going to hear it. So, shall we go to Boone, North Carolina for an assault? That's right. A 32-year-old woman assaulted a police car. Actually, the back seat thereof. This was in the Charlotte Observer, where a substantial amount of padding had been chewed away. Yeah. The department's Facebook post, and you know, that's another subject, why they all have Facebook posts, suggested they needed to invest in Kevlar seat covers. Authorities are still deciding whether to charge the detained woman in connection with the car's damages. I think they're probably trying to determine what they charge her with. Yeah, eating the upholstery? Under what heading would that come? Well, we'll get back to your calls as well. But here we go again. Does your home feel chilly? Utility bills seem high? Do you wonder if your home is properly insulated? PermaSeal can help with that. If you're not testing, you're guessing. PermaSeal can show you just how much energy loss your home is experiencing and precisely where those leaks are. Make your home feel even more comfortable and substantially lower those utility bills. For a free, honest insulation estimate, call PermaSeal at 800-421-7325. That's 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net. And with that said, the time has come, the moment you've been waiting for. It's time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
Midnight, one more night without sleeping. Watching till the morning comes creeping. Green door, what's that secret you're keeping?
There's an old piano and they play it hot behind the green door. Don't know what they're doing, but they laugh a lot behind the green door. Wish they let me in so I could find out what's behind the green door.
Not once tried to tell them I'd been there. Door slammed. Hospitality's thin there. Wonder just what's going on in there.
Saw an eyeball peeping through a smoky cloud behind the green door. When I said Joe sent me, someone laughed out loud behind the green door. All I want to do is join the happy crowd behind the green door.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yes, that's Jim Lowe, and it was Dave from LaSalle who wanted to hear that. Of course, it was a big hit in 1956 on Dot. And Jim Lowe was a disc jockey who also was somewhat of a songwriter. He wrote a hit for Rusty Draper and things like that. But he was in New York for years at WNEW and then for a while WNBC. And when he was there, he very often would be on Monitor, the NBC radio program. And he retired about 20 years ago now and was living on Long Island. But, you know, as far as 40s and 50s music, the pop standards and really the stuff that just as the big bands were starting to fade away, probably no one knew more about it than Jim Lowe. He was just a real student of that and died about, I think it was about 2016. So nonetheless, there was Green Door, which of course later became an inspiration for filmmakers everywhere. All right, well, yes, behind the Green Door. 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. And we have Mark in Aurora. Welcome back to WGN Radio. Hello, Mark. What's
mother
up?
And child who could whistle through their noses at 40 decibels.
Yes.
The subsonic communications from Wales, meaning we can't hear them.
Oh, I know.
Have been measured at 180 decibels.
Oh, I know. And the worst part about this, as you probably know if you know that fact, is that the whales are really endangered because a lot of the cruise ship business and all that is really kicking their ability to shards. It's very sad.
Yeah, it's... But if you were to be right near that, it would blow your eardrums instantly.
Well, but you wouldn't be right near it.
No, you wouldn't be right near it. But the sound next to an airplane, if you're standing outside of it, I believe is 120 decibels. And the loudest rock concerts are 120 decibels.
Mm.
40 decibels would be about what you would, the level you would hear if a bird was tweeting at a distance.
Well, with a lot of the noise the whales are making, it's beyond what we would normally hear.
Oh, yeah, that's why it's subsonic.
Right. So, you know, that's not an effect that's a problem. But what's interesting now is the stress that these whales are under has been causing a real change in behavior, and now a number of them are talking about hearing, not the whales, the people who are observing them obviously, are talking about honking noises and other things that they are now hearing out of the whales.
Yeah, and I don't remember where I heard it, but I heard something about how, oh, it was an NPR item about Margaret Mead doing research on hallucinogenic drugs,
mm-hmm.
and among what they looked into was trying to get dolphins to speak with us by feeding them LSD, and the idea is that they communicate ultrasonically.
Yes.
And if you lower the pitch of their voices, quote unquote, by computer, apparently you can make something intelligible out of it. It isn't like human speech, but you can discern patterns there.
I don't think any of us speak dolphin, though.
No, we don't. Although there was a psychologist named Lilly
who Hang on a minute.
Claimed that Stay. When he was on LSD, he could speak with dolphins.
Stay where you are. We'll pick it up right there. Well, leave the dolphins and...
That's all I am.
All right, well then, good to talk to you. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Mark. We'll get to James on the South Side and you two next hour. We'll get to the news right now on WGN Radio.
Yep, 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 yep.
Seems like me and money are through. The last little silver we spent in town. Cause all of my money has really turned brown. Cause
we're living for the poor house, baby.
It's a strange,
just strange as it may sound.
But we're headed for the poor house. Cause all my money turned brown.
Yip, 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 yip.
Well, I remember, baby, long time ago. Had so much money, it was laying on the floor. We had a pony, a car, and was way up on top. But things has changed, we really got to stop. Cause
we're in for the poorhouse, baby.
It's strange,
just strange as it may sound.
We're in for the poorhouse,
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Those are the Silhouettes. Yeah, 1958 on Ember, of course, known mostly for Get a Job. Get a Job was actually a B-side, and it was Robert and Stickney who wanted to hear the A-side, which is I Am Lonely, and I just absolutely refused. Yeah, not one of the better doo-wop records ever, to say the least. Kay Williams was a disc jockey on WDAS in Philadelphia, and he had little record labels like Junior Records. And he was recording the Silhouettes, in fact, recorded Get a Job and I Am Lonely, and then when it looked like it had some promise, he immediately sold it to Ember so it could be nationally distributed. And, of course, it went to number one on the pop and R&B charts, and yeah, the group was on American Bandstand and all that kind of stuff. And there were other records, and sadly, they had never had another hit. The Heading for the Poorhouse, which you just heard, kind of continued that theme of money, yeah, and inflation and all that kind of stuff. But there were others as well, four or five that I can think of off of the top of my head, some of them better than others. Maybe I'll play another one. But they were a great little group. They toured very often with all of the other groups of the day, like I mentioned at the Kiel Opera House in St. Louis. You know, you'd have 20 acts, and one of them would be the Silhouettes. So they were in the package shows all over the place. And sadly, absolutely none of them are alive anymore. I think Bill Horton, who was a lead singer, he was the first to die, and that was in 95. And I think the bass player died, singer died a couple years after that, and then, successively every one of them. But they were sure great in their day, the Silhouettes. All right, so happy to play that for Robert and Stickney, and I think I'll play What Would You Do? That's the other Silhouettes record that never gets any respect, and really should. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888 Raleigh, and James is on the south side. So how's it going, James?
Oh, I'm hanging in here. Yeah, just watch the snow I'll drift down.
Yeah, oh yeah, and you're going to get more of it tonight.
Yep. Yeah, you can't do anything about that. Oh, I did notice a couple of my stories didn't make it through when the phone changed over. So I'll at least briefly tell you a little bit about them. I didn't get a chance to really look at them.
Okay.
That much. Other than there's some, like there was one about a boy who died, a two-year-old who died of starvation next to his dead father.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I said, well, maybe it was probably all for the best that one didn't get through.
Yeah, that's a harsh story, and I assume that natural causes on Dad.
Yeah, and since I guess the two-year obviously has no way of, unless he's very precocious, he's pretty much left to fend for his own.
Well, I think it was a UK story, and it was interesting because Dad had a heart attack, but Dad was also over 60. So that was the deal there, and I have no idea where Mom was in that.
Yeah, that was the thing. I was like, I said, oh, I'll get a chance. And then, of course, once I no way to really reconnect with it that way.
Well, right. And the other thing is, when you read the details, this couple was found 2 weeks later. So my first question was, all the information we don't get in the story is, nobody checked on them for 2 weeks?
You know, okay, I've noticed, okay, a lot of stories like that. You start thinking, well, here's what's happened. Since you, used to be in the day you had, like, what you would have, the extended family.
Right.
Now you have what you have, at least you, then you came to the nuclear family, where basically, and now you don't. Actually, sometimes you don't even have that.
No, you have social services, and that's actually who knocked on the door when there was no response. Now, why the social worker was even involved in the equation, I don't know. So
Okay. Because I think I didn't even find another related story that would have probably explained more. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes they have that, yeah.
Yeah, well, they did say that the dad was unemployed and had a heart condition. Well, a 60-year-old unemployed man with a heart condition caring for a 2-year-old child, what's wrong with that story to begin with?
There's something very, very peculiar, like...
Right.
First off, why is he even fathering a child?
Well, there's that. But where's mother? And we don't know from these stories where mother is. What we do know, the only thing we know, is that apparently social workers got involved and they were supposed to be there weekly. So I'm not 100% sure why it took over 2 weeks for them to show up. But yes, that was a truly horrible story.
Yeah, then, of course, one, I guess we could say the only other one that's worth really going into is something about Texas's most wanted fugitive is finally caught after 10 years on the lam.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, and I'm like thinking, well, that pretty much takes the cake. But hey, Texas is a big place. You can hide out. You can even go across the border.
Well, let's also mention that this most wanted criminal was a woman, and it was a woman who was wanted for abusing a child, inappropriate relationship with an 11-year-old girl. Apparently, it wasn't Texas authorities who found her. It was Interpol in Mexico that took her into custody. And, 3 counts of indecency with a child, sexual contact, 3 counts of harassment, 1 count of unlawful restraint. Obviously, this is a problem, but it does beg, how did it take 10 years?
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm almost like wanting to know, okay... this is like, okay, let's just simply say, lock this person away and basically don't even support at least 10 years and then add another 10 years on. Maybe by then she'll be too old to even think these things thoughts.
I don't know. She was certainly cunning. She gained employment at a behavioral health center that allowed her to visit the victim. This is after she had terrorized this child under the pretext of being a counselor and that she was offering guidance and support. And it went downhill from there. And ultimately, the tip line is what helped him more than anything. And the one that says, up to $5,000 reward, and somebody called it.
Money talks.
That's
yeah.
right. Nobody
money
walks.
Talks.
Yep. You betcha. So that was that was an interesting story. Of course, nothing really beats the food fight. The guy being assaulted with a watermelon, but still, that's.
I gotta admit, I was thinking about. Gallagher when I saw that.
Right, exactly. And meanwhile, the grocery store employees are not allowed to talk about it. I don't know. I'd film it, but I hope somebody did. But nonetheless.
Oh, guess what? It's on some security camera.
Yeah, you'd hope.
You know those places.
You would absolutely hope. And here's a novel, maybe not so novel, I don't know, way. Obviously, we don't tackle the big things, but everybody does know there's that pesky issue between Russia and Ukraine. Well, it turns up now Putin is turning off the heating in prisons to force inmates to sign up to fight. Novel.
Okay. It's like instead of having a poster up of him saying, "I want you."
Right. Exactly. So they've made it unbearably cold so that people will say, "Hey, the Ukraine's better than this." And so.
And guess what? And here's the thing. Actually, if you survive. Lose a limb or two, then you get your rest of your sins commuted.
Oh God! Yeah, well,
isn't that right?
Isn't that an enticement? Yeah, just truly horrifying. And there's a rise of females fighting, I guess, with the same cannot refuse offer.
Okay, who knows? They might actually be filming that thinking, oh, okay, we'll get a chance of some weird sort of thing, you know, that sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, so there's
all right.
Nothing. There's never a time when you look for these stories and don't find any, because they just keep on coming.
Yeah, and I'll tell you I had to admit, when I saw the mouse thing, I said, hey, okay, little guy, big brain.
Well, I'll tell you, if we can train more mice to do that, I think that they'll all get their own condos from the 17-year-old girl, because hell, we could all use those. But I think it's a one of a kind mouse. I'm sorry to say.
Whoever it is, that unfortunately he might have been the pick of the litter.
Right, if you want to call it that, yes. Yeah, so indeed. We had the story of three guys watching football together who apparently did each other in. And another one, like, what? And we had the guy, as I was saying earlier, who shot his family for practicing witchcraft on him. Three felony counts of aggravated assault. And, you know, I hate these articles that never explain what is in this guy's mind. I realize that he's obviously, you know, as they say, loco and la cabeza. But the bottom line here is that a 23-year-old who opened fires on his brothers and sister because he thinks they're practicing witchcraft, what led him to think this?
A lot of times they don't explain anything. Then sometimes you'll hear something maybe a year or two down the road, some court thing proceeding. Yeah. Oh, they'll say, well, they supposedly thought their music, something choice, and they listened to it, and supposedly that led them to believe, that this was leading them to that, or some other thing, or their choice of clothing.
Yeah, it could be
that.
Anything, but I'd love to know what the trigger point is here. Meanwhile, this is 4 in the afternoon on a Sunday in a Houston apartment, where the guy suddenly gets up from the couch and shoots his sister to the point that she's critically injured, and his brother, and then just threatens his other brother as far as that goes. And I understand the girl who was in critical condition, he's upgraded now to stable, but two of them are in the hospital, and no one's talking about what was on his mind. There was a probable cause hearing Monday, and there's bond, but absolutely no one has been able to determine a motive.
As we say, what's happened in the last few years, people have reached the tipping point, and they've gone like that line of high anxiety. Well, hey, they've passed it well beyond what Jimmy Stewart just through the vertical.
Oh, yeah, there you have it. So always wonderful. Your phone seems to be working out. You're on it, and you're speaking well. So as always, thank you for all 9 zillion stories.
Okay, I'm still getting the part where it's getting the news thing linked, getting back up with going on this.
You'll know. All right, thanks, appreciate it. All right, so.
Okay.
There you have it. Then we have individuals who actually have a job and are saying, I want out. And this is actually, in this case, not only of the job. Yeah, be careful if you think you're going to buy a franchise. That's right. And please pick one that you know an awful lot about. Well, yes, it's a Red Lobster investor. I'll give you the details coming up on WGN Radio.
Well, I gave her a
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. More Silhouettes. What Would You Do? 1958 on Junior. That's right. Kay Williams, who had been passing things off to Ember when it came to the Silhouettes that he was managing. Apparently, Ember didn't take that, and Junior put it out, and it was got airplay in Philadelphia, but that was about it. So played that for Robert from Stickney, who likes I Am Lonely, which was the original A-side of Get a Job. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. So originally Red Lobster was owned by Darden, and they did very well with it. But in 2014, they sold it to Golden Gate Capital. And a couple years later, here is a seafood supplier in Bangkok. And they'd done very well supplying all the seafood to Red Lobster. So they thought, well, why don't we just own them? A minority stake in the business, they paid $575 million for. And that you know, in the next 4 years, they should have realized that this maybe wasn't the business they were in. But no, in 2020, the Thai Union got an investment group to buy all of the Red Lobster. During the depths of the pandemic, of course, and they were committed to turning it around. I told you about the endless shrimp. Oh, it was a big hit. The problem was it cost them more to serve the shrimp and buy the shrimp than it did to, in fact, any money they might make from the endless shrimp. Yeah, the $20 deal really was too good to be true. Not for the customer, but for the chain. Yes, it generated more traffic and led to an operating loss of $11 million. So, no, you got to price it right. And nonetheless, at that point, we're still committed to a turnaround. Well, now they're saying, we give up. They've apparently had enough endless shrimp. And so they have announced that they're ready to leave due to prolonged negative financial contributions. So, yeah, they should have never gone in there in the first place. All right, well, all that and other disasters, I'm sure, coming up next on WGN Radio.
Clyde, who sees this strength I got inside. So he says to me, hey, I want some of that. I say, Clyde, it's easy as 1, 2, 3. You just say this simple prayer with me. He said, not me, but I still want some of that. Ooh, some of that. Well, I was sharing with this salesman Lyle, so he says, with $1 million smile, why, that's interesting, you know, here, I'd like some of that. I said, Lyle, you're gonna have to humble your pride and ask the Lord to come inside. He said, oh, but I still want some of that. In astrology, that horoscope you read is just a waste. You can't find it looking at the stars, Jupiter, the moon, and Mars. 'Cause you'll soon find that all you got was space. Well, my best friend Ray's got this need. In my eyes, this piece. So yesterday she said,
I want some of this.
Well, I said, hey, sugar, now it's a breeze. You just talk with Jesus on your knees. She said,
I'm not the type, but I still want some of this.
Oh, they all want some of that.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Carmen. Sadly, he would have turned 68 this week. Not sad that that would have happened tomorrow, but sad that, of course, he died in 2021, just 65 years old. And in many ways, a life well lived. But boy, I'll tell you, it started in 2011 that he had a bad car accident right before a concert, and then was had some surgeries, was pretty much affected by that. And next thing you know, I think it was 2023, he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, and he fought that, and by 2024, he was proclaimed cancer-free, and as far as I know, that was the case. I don't know that it returned for a while in 2020, but I don't think it was a fatal diagnosis. What happened was he had to do a surgery on a hiatal hernia in early 2021, and what happened was that it wasn't the surgery itself, but complications set in right after them, and it was sort of a cascade of events at a Las Vegas hospital, and he died, and so that was the end of Carmen. But in about about 2017, that he got married for the first time. He was like 61 years old and got married to a woman named Dana Morrow, and she had like six kids and all that. But by all accounts, it was good. And there again, in his personal life, he had another engagement. He was planning to marry this woman, you know, head over heels in love, and she died just like 2 weeks before the wedding was going to take place. So it was tough. But along the way, This boy from Trenton, who was growing up in a big Italian Catholic family, became a contemporary Christian singer, and a lot of Grammy nominations, and you know, probably millions of sales. And some of that is what I played. That came out in about 82 and did pretty well. He had, you know, tours that backed it up, and yeah, Radically Saved, and all that kind of stuff. It was really just good stuff. The Champion, and you know, they were kind of like mini plays, if you will. And in fact, it was number one, The Champion, on the Christian charts, and on it went. So it was pretty good. And when I say that his concert sold well, there was one in Chattanooga where 80,000 people attended. So it was huge, and that was true in a number of other places as well. So really a shame that he left us, but there it is. Rest in peace, Carmen, who would have been 68 tomorrow. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. Phil Everly would have been 85 tomorrow, born in Chicago in 1939, and grew up in Iowa and in Knoxville, and died in Burbank 2014, just before his 75th birthday. And His brothers, you know, Don Everly, we were talking about him, died in 2021, 84 years old. So, yeah, a lot of people think they were from Bowling Green because, of course, they had the hit. But, no, mostly in the Iowa Music Hall of Fame. Shelley Fabre, 80 tomorrow. Boy, that'll age you. Seems like just yesterday she was ending a Donna Reed episode singing Johnny Angel. So, Janis Joplin would have been 81 this week. Yeah, a year older than Shelley Fabre, indeed. And, of course, really taken too soon. 27 years old, heroin overdose in 1970. Yeah, Robert Palmer would have turned 75 tomorrow. January 19th. I got to go back 9 months to see what precipitated all this. So anyway, he was born in 1949 in England, as far as that. Died in 2003 in Paris, heart attack, just 54 years old. Dolly Parton, 78 tomorrow. Yeah, it's and the hits just keep on coming. That's amazing. Born obviously in Tennessee. Yes, and not too far out of Gatlinburg. So it was on this date in 1959 that the Everly Brothers were in England for their first visit, and they were on TV there and all. They got a big fancy reception. That was Phil's 20th birthday. So there you have it. In 1967, television's Batman was doing well, and featuring Leslie Gore playing Catwoman's assistant, Pussycat, on a two-part episode, which gave her a chance to sing California Nights right there on Batman. Apparently, Pussycat hypnotizes Robin and turns him into Catwoman's side before he's rescued. That darn Catwoman, spoofing the then-popular movie. And that's the deal. So why Leslie Gore? Well, her uncle was the series producer, Howie Horwitz, which explains that. And yeah, Stanley Ralph Ross wrote a lot of those episodes, who was hilariously funny, of course. He was half of Arbogast guest and Ross in the Chaos single of 1959 that did very well on Dr. Demento, but maybe not anywhere else. What else do we have? We got a number of things, and your calls would be appreciated. 888-876-5593. That would be 8888-ROLLYE. Now, I was looking for all the events that are happening right about now, because I'll tell you what's going on next week. There are several abbreviated shows. So next full show is actually Tuesday. Monday night, we'll spend about a half hour together. Maybe we'll review some trivia. I don't know. It'll be a very abbreviated show with maybe trivia. Then Tuesday is a full show. Wednesday, that's another half hour right after Blackhawks hockey. And then Thursday, I think we're going to have an hour and a half after Blackhawks hockey. But I got recently was given the schedule of upcoming hockey games, and I'll at some point let you know what the rest of them are. But that's the deal. So full show Tuesday and very abbreviated Monday night trivia. What else? Well, we're just about coming out of the shadow of the retrograde. That's right. Mercury went direct New Year's Day, but the shadow continues through this Saturday. And then next actual retrograde is April 4th, but the shadow, of course, will start a few weeks before that. New full moon? Well, Thursday, January 25th, which actually is next week. Yeah. But new moon, which is when you're writing your prosperity checks, would be February 9th. All right, so other things we can tell you about tomorrow is Tin Can Day. Oh, I can't wait to find out how to celebrate that. And Popcorn Day. All right, well, I always say I will and then I don't, but I've got to look into how these things are named. Like, who certifies it? Can you start your own day? I mean, in some cases, you know, the state proclaims or whatever, but, you know, who is it? Well, I mean, the Tin Can Day, probably the canning people, but who do they go to get a day? I'll have to find out. Maybe you'd like a day. Don and Beloit, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey.
What's up?
Riley?
Yes.
Hey, how's it going? How's it going? Hey, this is Don. Yeah, yeah, a lot of snow, a lot of cold. Oh, well, it's just winter. Weather to us.
It's winter, yep.
I always wanted to ask you about Herb Albert and A&M Records. You know, were you around any A&M salespeople going through? But, you know, just the A&M, right? I mean, he just started this amazing record.
Yeah, with Jerry Moss, that's the M, and Albert is Albert. But before that, he was working for Dory. And that early stuff, I just loved. And so that was long before there was an A&M. But he did quite a bit of that Dory stuff. But he was a Fairfax High grad, a little bit older than his fellow Fairfax High grad, Phil Spector. Because I think that Albert was I think Albert graduated in like 51. And he was originally from Boyle Heights. And Boyle Heights, which is now heavily, you know, East L.A. Hispanic, at the time was not far from downtown L.A., and it was a largely Jewish neighborhood. And the families there wound up moving to the Fairfax, not all of them, most of them wound up moving to the Fairfax district. And that's where he wound up growing up and going to high school, and I think his mother, I think, was a musician of some sort, and his father was like a tailor. So, they all studied some instrument, and I think Herb began to play the trumpet when he was in grade school. So, that was the deal there, and he did well. And then he went to USC and was in the Trojan marching band. And so, and then of course Korea hit. So you knew that was going to happen. And then when he came back from that, he started, you know, dealing with a lot of the independent labels. And one of them, like I say, was Dory. I love that stuff. But he also was in, and by the way, I think that, he like produced Baby Talk for Janet Dean and all that kind of stuff. But he wound up dealing with Keen Records as well. And, I think he might have co-written Wonderful World by Sam Cooke. I'd have to look that up. But he did. Keen Records, of course, was, Bob Keen. And so I love those independent things. And he got a contract himself with RCA. And it's interesting because the name he used was Dory Albert. And, of course, Dory was the little label he'd been working for it. And then he and Jerry Ross formed, long before there was an A&M, formed Carnival Records. I don't think they realized there was a Carnival Records in Newark, and a damn good one, too. This was not them, and but they managed to get a distribution deal with Dot, and pretty much realized they needed another name, because I guess at some point someone said, you do realize that Carnival is a pretty good little R&B label in Newark, and no, we didn't know. So they thought, well, Albert and Moss, A and M, and that's how that happened.
It's just the right timing on it. It's just amazing, right? That a new album for the new people coming out, but great timing. He had his whole career.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not only the timing, though. I mean, this is a guy, like I say, he was writing these and producing these little pop songs on Dory. And, of course, remember, he was playing. Part of his money was playing the Tijuana Band and all that kind of stuff. And in fact, the first stuff that was released on A&M were like Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Band. And that was, I think, the debut album was The Lonely Bowl. And that did very well. And, you know, with it was somewhat of a production trick, because what set the Tijuana Brass musically aside in terms of sound was he was overdubbing slightly out of sync. And that's how it got that sound. And you know, obviously he did session work and all that kind of stuff as well, you know, in the early days. And then, of course, later the label had a number of people on it. I knew people who worked at A&M, and they liked it. It was, you know, in fact, they were really sorry when it sold. I think a Polygram bought it in like 1989, and so it was a good deal. They got a lot of money, and then Polygram breached the deal, and they got more money.
$460 million.
Well, it was actually more than that, because they got another couple hundred million because Polygram breached the deal. So it was a lot of money. In any event, you know, he...
And then Seagram, do you remember that? It was a weird time, right? Seagram's gets it for a while?
Well, yeah, you know, once they go overseas, I lose interest and I don't know. I know what goes on in America, and I know it was October of 89, because like I say, I had new people there who were not very pleased, but, you know, it wasn't unexpected.
Going back to, I don't know, I mean, he just, of course, he was an amazing record producer and doing all this, but 65, I guess, skipping back and then skipping up to 65, he releases that Taste of Honey. I always think of that album cover, you know, I mean, I didn't grow up with it.
You're talking about Whipped Cream and Other Delights. Yeah, it was a huge album. Yeah, it was a huge, huge album. And a green cover with a girl on it who was covered in whipped cream. Yeah,
of course. So, we're going to go wrong with that.
So, you know, it was, and of course, you know, it didn't hurt that his stuff was used as a game show theme, which, you know, got him paid every episode.
The dating game, and so on.
And he also had, there was a local dance show, it was on, I think, Channel 11 first, but then Channel 13, KCOP, I'm trying to think of the guy's name, Lloyd Thaxton. Anyway, Lloyd Thaxton used a Herb Alpert song as his theme, so that played every week as well.
It's interesting how he's trying to give back, like that CBS Sunday show, you know, really, really featured him so well, giving back with his wife, with their foundation. Lonnie Hall, of course.
Well, that's a second.
Herb and Lonnie Hall.
That's a second wife, right. And boy, Sergio Mendez was mad. Oh, God. That was a soap opera. Lanny was...
She was a singer in Brazil, of course.
No, she was actually from Chicago. Lanny Hall was a Chicago singer and was in a club when Sergio Mendez needed a girl singer for what would become Brazil 66, and heard her and enlisted her. And that's, you know, it was formed more around her voice at that time. His earlier stuff wasn't her. But, she was with him when Herb was separating from the wife he had forever, I can't think of her name right now. But anyway, they got together, and then it's been a real solid marriage for them. But at first, Sergio was like, "You took my girl singer," and in fact, Sergio was so mad that he left the label. He went to Elektra, And they got back together again. You became friendly again. But Sharon was the first wife. Yeah, Sharon. Oh, okay. Sharon
did
Lubin.
Did you enjoy Brazil? Did you like listening to them?
I loved the Sergio Mendes trio. I loved what became here. They called it Brazil 65. But the stuff that he did with Wanda de Sá and, you know, that stuff, man, I have all that stuff and I love it, the early stuff. The only American album that I truly love, you know, one of those things that I won't part with it at any cost. There's only one on A&M, and that is an album called Equinox. And the rest of the crap, I don't want to hear no Fool on the Hill. You know, I don't want to hear Look of Love. I don't want to hear any of that garbage. But boy, that Equinox was just a brilliant album. And it never made it to CD. But that was the big album. And then later in the 80s, when he was on Elektra, there were a couple things that were pretty nice.
Okay. Equinox, gonna look that one up.
Yeah, Equinox. Oh man, that's the one. And of his stuff on A&M. Now the earlier stuff, you'll see it either as Sergio Mendes and Brazil 65, or if it's on Tower, it'll say the Sergio Mendes Trio. And there are some just brilliant things. And then some of the stuff before that, when he was a teenager, I loved that stuff.
Wow. All
right.
Yeah. Ever run into Herb Albert?
Yeah, I ran into, you know, remember I was radio writer for Billboard. So, you know, in fact, right. One of the pictures I found fairly recently was me talking to Sergio Mendes in the office. And
That's great. Yeah, that's great.
You know, and so, yeah, because he had brought us this big cake because all of a sudden in the 80s, he had some number one record again. Not anything I particularly liked, but it was number one. Big cake, and he came in and all that and talked with everybody for a while. And then his house burned down in... that would have been like 1980. It did. Burned down.
Oh, no.
And in Encino. But the insurance company put him and his wife up in this really nice hotel in Westwood. I mean, it was really nice digs, and they were there for like 6 months. And he invited me over one day. So I sat there, and we talked. In fact, I recorded some of that.
Well, I hope you consider, like, publishing, like, a picture book or something.
No,
like,
there will be no picture book. All right. Thanks for calling.
Well,
I appreciate
that's a great
it, Don.
Idea.
All right. Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
So we'll find out what's going on in the world at large. Have a little news coming up. Yes, the facts, just the facts. And then we'll get back to Johnny D, Sherry, and you on WGN Radio. And with a little Sergio Mendes, Obalala in the background, I've got about enough time to say, well, good night, everybody. And apologies to those of you who are now hanging on. Call earlier next week. On that note, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air. We thank John for screening your calls. And above all, I thank you for calling. We'll do it all again Monday night after the game right here on WGN Radio.